this is my weekly podcast, Adventures with Postpartum Depression, a show dedicated to sharing stories and spreading awareness about maternal mood disorders. For show notes and more information, please go to my website, ppdadventures.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/ppdadventures. And now, on to the show. Hi everyone, it's Courtney and this is episode 30. This week, Lindsay is sharing her story with us, and you know, I usually don't give trigger warnings, but Lindsay is very bravely and very openly talking to us about how she was sexually abused as a child by her stepfather. It's not graphic descriptions, but it was an experience that was a major contributing trigger to her own experiences with postpartum mood disorders. So thank you, Lindsay, so much for telling your story and sharing it with us. I know you're going to be helping so many moms. It's, you know, sexual abuse is not something we talk a lot about. We're not really comfortable talking about those things, at least in my experience in our society. And it's sort of something that we pretend doesn't happen. We ignore it. It just gets shoved away. And yet in my work I'm still doing a support group in Pasadena. And I've had at least two moms who have talked to me about their own sexual abuse as a child. And those are the two who have talked to me. So this is something that is happening. This is not like Lindsay's story is unique. It's her story. But it's not like the fact that she was sexually abused is this. Unfortunately, it's not rare. There are a lot of moms out there who were sexually abused as children, and then having a child brings up all the shit of being sexually abused. So thank you, Lindsay, so much for sharing your story and helping fight the stigma. There shouldn't be any shame in being a victim of sexual abuse, but I know there's just so many messy, ugly feelings tied up with that. And I was lucky I got to meet Lindsay before I interviewed her. We met briefly at Warrior Mom Con. We were sitting at the same table during some talks, and we were on opposite sides of the table. And Lindsay is beautiful, and there has this elegance to her, and radiates this really good energy. And I had no idea she was sexually abused until we were doing the interview and talking and, you know, get going, and she tells me. And what I'm trying to say is, it's so easy to look at a mom on the street and assume everything in her life is glamorous and perfect, but you never know the full story. When you're at like a mommy and me class, and all of the moms there seem to have their shit together, and you're the only one suffering, you're not. There's people who have, I'm not saying Lindsay has had a facade, not at all, but in the minutes that we were able to interact, you know, it's not like she was trying to tell me that she had been sexually abused or that she was trying to hide it. It's just it wasn't present. And that's why I love doing these interviews. It's so great because we just dive right past all the superficialities of, you know, meeting someone, and we get down to the really important conversations that need to happen. And I think I've taken enough of your time, and I'm going to turn this over to Lindsay. Lindsay, thank you so much for sharing your story. I loved talking to you so much, and I know everyone's going to love listening to you now. Hi, Lindsay. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
So I know a bit about your story, but do you want to give like a little quick overview for the listeners?
Sure. I think there are a few factors that I kind of had to explain in going into it. And then there's an overview. I had severe anxiety at first, and then I also had some PTSD, and eventually I would say I fell into depression along with those other lovely categories. I believe that it was brought on mainly because of my history of sexual abuse as a child, and also the birth that I experienced with my son, and not really having a space to talk about the trauma of that happening caused me to hold it in, and I think in the end that's a lot of problems.
So, what should we talk about first? Are you comfortable? Do you want to just say and leave it that you have a history of sexual abuse, or do you want to talk more about that? Anything's fine here.
Sure. I would say it might be, I think it's helpful to talk about it a little bit. We don't obviously have to go into detail, but the way that it related to motherhood was something I believe other women could relate to as well. I experienced the abuse from a family member who I lived with for 10 years, and what I felt then after the birth that was related to it was that this person had controlled me for a lot of my life and used the sort of sexual behavior to manipulate me and control me, and also his anger was a problem. So things all tied together. And I did a few years of therapy before I had my son, and I felt like I was in a really good place. And honestly, it didn't really occur to me, nor did anybody really give me any kind of heads up. Then once I was a parent, that some of these things might come back, or that could be triggering for me. I also, right before, or while I was pregnant, I had been working on putting charges against my stepfather, who was the abuser, because he actually works with families and children. I believe he doesn't anymore, but it took me a while to kind of sift through that information. I found out while I was pregnant that he still had a license to practice as a therapist, which I was under the impression that he did not. So I was trying to take action on that to protect other children while feeling like I also had to protect myself and my child. And then once I had my son, and I felt a great need to predict his behavior, so that I could do the right thing and make him happy, and so that he would not control me, that I would control him. So I read a lot of books about sleep schedules and about breastfeeding, and I just tried to control everything. And as everyone knows who has a newborn, that does not work. And the longer that went on, after a couple of weeks of figuring out that they don't work like clocks, maybe, then I started to really get more and more obsessed about not being able to control things. So that's kind of in a nutshell what kind of role it played for me.
I'm just sitting here processing. No, it makes sense. I'm just, thank you for sharing all that. No, you can go.
I was going to say the other aspect of it is related to breastfeeding, but we can get into that a little bit later. I don't know if you wanted me to kind of run through the birth story and things like that, and then I could jump into that topic, or if you have any other questions.
No, why don't we? You can go with the birth story. Whatever goes, you know, our stories are messy as can be, so there's never a an easy way to tell them.
Absolutely. I understand. Yeah, the other thing I think that strikes me looking back, and I think is also a factor for a lot of women, is with the birth and then PPD or PCA, OCD, all these things, especially for those of us who have been, you know, how should I say this? Yeah, so it felt very out of, like, being out of control was very dangerous for us because we'd been hurt in that way before. I did a lot of research on what kind of birth I thought I wanted to have and the best thing for me and for the baby and for, you know, I learned all about natural childbirth and having a midwife and a doula, all those things, and, like, trusting your body. And I thought, wow, this sounds so wonderful and empowering and enlightening, and it is, I think, for a lot of people. I just think what happened with me is that it turned into something where I felt like I could, because I did all those things, I could control the birth and I could make it all be okay. And, you know, I watched The Business of Being Born, and those women in the video, like, oh, in the movies, usually the woman is screaming during the birth and the doctors have to rescue her. It doesn't have to be a medical situation. And then all the women giving birth in that movie were just kind of grunting, you know, maybe some yelling. But it was all very relatively calm compared to my experience with my son, which was just, I felt like I was screaming the whole time. And I had back labor, so the pain, they, you know, they tell you in the class you're going to have 2-minute breaks between contractions, and that did not happen at all for the last 4 or 5 hours. The other thing I was not prepared for was that having random people touching my body during the birth would be very traumatic, as, again, the feeling of being controlled, other people doing things I didn't want them to do. There was a nurse, a labor nurse, who was really very unfriendly. She kept trying to get the wrap around my belly and check my cervix. I'm pretty sure that even if I met her in person now, I would find her to be kind of unfriendly. But in that moment, I thought she really hated me. And that was really uncomfortable. So I basically spent most of the labor in the bathroom, on the toilet, my husband trying to push against my knees to keep my back pain a little more manageable. And so
did you go natural later, the whole time? Did you go natural the whole time?
I did, which also meant that everybody afterward, I think, I am happy about that, but that became the thing that everyone focused on. If I tried to ask or try to talk about how terrifying it was, and they just repeated, oh, you had a natural birth and you were so strong and beautiful. Nobody wanted to hear that I felt horrible and dirty and disgusting and weak. So, I believe I've spoken with other women who had this goal and went through with it, or a home birth, and they had a difficult time with it in the end, but they had no space to talk about it. Nobody really wanted to hear it. I tried to talk about it with the doula. She just repeated the same thing over and over. But it was beautiful. Yeah, in the end, also, we had my son's heartbeat dropped right when I was ready to push him out, and the situation was a little bit complicated because I had a midwife in a hospital. Midwives are not allowed to use equipment in the hospital. They're allowed to do the birth, but not use the vacuum extractor or anything else. So basically, she was afraid she might need the vacuum extractor based on the situation, that he was ready to come out but not thriving. So she asked me to hold on. It's so funny. Every time I tell this, I just had to laugh. Don't push. Which, as you know, is not really possible. So basically, they held this little fake candle up to my lips. They sent this whole team of people in. They hooked me up to oxygen and an IV and slipped on the lights. And they told me to blow out this little fake candle. So I would go. Every time I had a contraction, she would push the baby back inside. And that is also terrifying because you have your whole body and being telling you it is time to have this baby, and they're saying, no, you can't. You can't do that yet. So we waited, I don't know how long it was, 20 minutes or something, for the doctor to come. And then once, I don't even see this person, I don't know who the doctor was. As soon as the doctor came in, they said, okay, now you can push. And I pushed my son out in like 5 minutes. So there was no need for the vacuum extractor anyway. I think that experience also was the beginning of where I felt like I had felt something was right. Like I was ready to have him. He was ready to come out, but I couldn't do it because of the doctors, the hospital, the midwife. And that's just a horrible feeling. You feel like other people are making these decisions for you. They don't believe you, you know, or they can't trust your instincts. So yeah, that was kind of the beginning of that.
I've never thought of it that way. I had the opposite because I wanted the epidural, and yeah. It wore off right before it was time to push, and they convinced, and I really wanted the epidural again, and they'd refreshed it once during the day, and my doctor and nurse convinced me that I'd be able to push better if I just didn't get it refreshed. And yeah. I felt really unempowered because I'd gone in thinking like, I'm gonna have an epidural and I'll feel all the pressure and I'll know when to push, but I won't have all the pain.
Got it.
And yeah, it's the, you know, the opposite experience from you, but having someone denying the way you wanted to go through the birthing experience.
Right.
Taking that control.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. I mean, I think actually it's important to, you have to give it up to some extent, although I know it's not, you don't want to go in there saying, like, just do whatever you want with me. But yeah, I don't know. It's very tricky, because you can't really have the illusion that you are going to do everything, but on the other hand, you don't want to, there could be things that they do that you don't want, for example, I know a lot of doctors do, and I hope it's better these days, but in the past it was, you know, they just perform an episiotomy without asking, things like that. Like, that's something. Yeah, it's just tricky.
Yeah. So how did you feel after you gave birth? Do you feel like, where were your feelings? What started first?
So I was lucky in the first 2 weeks or so. Like, besides the birthing, I mean, it's kind of in the back of my mind, like, hey, that was awful. What the heck? Because, like I said, nobody wanted to hear. But I was lucky. I bonded with my son, and I felt pretty happy at first. I mean, breastfeeding, of course, I'm not saying this is the same for everyone, but for me, I felt like there was no question that I was going to breastfeed because, again, this whole natural thing, I was on a kick with that. And I had plenty of milk. He latched on fine. And that went really well. He slept a lot at first. And I felt, just kind of took it all in. I had some tearing probably because I was terrified and, you know, like, got him out really fast. Oh, forgot about all that. You know, you're supposed to go slowly. Crap. So that was kind of not fun. But it wasn't as bad as I had imagined. And so yeah, the first 2 weeks were fine,
Then what happened after those 2 weeks?
And then what happened?
Yeah.
Sorry, you just cut out for a second. So around 2 weeks is when I think my hormones crashed. I've heard a lot of women say that it was about 2 weeks and that they suddenly, like, felt a big difference. I believe that was part of it. And also the baby stopped sleeping so much, started being more alert. And he was a very... He wanted to be to breastfeed all the time and fall asleep, which I think a lot of newborns do. But I was just completely overwhelmed by that because I kept thinking, it's not on the schedule. He's not supposed to sleep on me. He's supposed to nurse and then play and then go to sleep. That's what the book says. So I kept trying to get that to work. And then I kept, you know, tracking his feedings. And then, like, around... Yeah, around the 2 week mark, when I tried to go to bed at night, I couldn't stop thinking about the feeding schedule and how I was going to do it the next day so that the schedule was going to work and how we got off that every 3 to 4 hour feeding thing. And so I basically just stopped sleeping. I'm pretty sure for 2 or 3 days, maybe 4 days. And I started having panic attacks, big anxiety attacks during the day. If he didn't do what I expected, I would just start sobbing, hot and cold all the time. So everyone was like, everyone being my husband and my parents who I talked to just kept saying, like, he's fine, you're fine, just stop crying. Just get it together. It's not going to be like the book, blah, blah, blah. But I couldn't get it through my head. And I saw, we had a couple of therapists at the time who basically couldn't figure out what was going on with me either. Eventually, when I didn't sleep for those few days, she told me I needed to get sleeping medication and I just needed to sleep and then I'd be fine. So she got me to go to urgent care and get some Ambien. And I was afraid to be in the house with the baby at night because I was afraid, even though I've been sleeping with earplugs and my husband would bring me the baby to nurse during the night, I felt like, first of all, they told me I couldn't breastfeed if I was on Ambien during the night. And second, I just felt like I was so strung out by that point that I couldn't be in the same house. So our neighbors let me sleep in their place, which sounds pretty crazy. But
I had another mom I interviewed on the show who, Kalina, was sleeping at her mom's house for part of her recovery. So it doesn't sound crazy at all to me.
It happens, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, I think it actually can be really helpful. I mean, it just at that moment, it was the only thing I could imagine. And like, I had most of my other friends who had young babies were very attached and just seemed to be doing fine with that. So I think their reaction was like, what? You know, how could you not be in, you know, how could you not, first of all, not be breastfeeding, not be in the house, whatever. So I'm very lucky my husband was, he stepped right in and was like, no problem, you go to sleep, I'm going to give him formula, even though he'd never had a bottle, ever, never had any formula. He's like, I got this. And it went actually fine. We were super fortunate. And I thought that was the end of it. That would have been nice, but I slept with the neighbors for a few nights. Got knocked out by the Ambien for a few hours. But, the next thing that happened is I joined a day because I was still so anxious all the time. I think that's when I talked to my midwife, and she, or her nurse practitioner, gave me the screening for PPD, so that was good. She didn't, however, tell me that I had a condition or anything. Maybe she's not allowed to do that, but she just said, you scored pretty high on this test. I think you should go see a therapist. And I was thinking, well, I have a therapist. That's okay. I got it. You know, it's all good. I just, you know, I'll be fine. My therapist still, though, was like, oh, I don't know why you're still worrying about all these things. That was pretty much all she said. So luckily, the nurse practitioner at the Midwest office had given me a business card of a psychiatrist and a therapist who actually is one of, she's written several books, and her name's Peg Inman. She's kind of an expert on CPD type illnesses. Anyway, but it took me a week to actually go see her because I thought I had somebody already taking care of me who totally did not see the big picture. So long story short, I ended up getting diagnosed by Peg with EPA at that point. And then she told me about a day program for moms, like an outpatient intensive therapy program. And I went to that. But what happened to me at that point is my anxiety got so high that if I heard about other people's problems, I couldn't really distinguish that they were not mine. So, like, hearing other moms saying, like, oh, my child doesn't sleep, or my child is sick, or I'm worrying about blah, 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 I would start doing the same thing. I would start obsessing about that. So that did not work for me, unfortunately. So that's kind of the next step. Do you have any questions?
No, I was just thinking, as you said, that hearing the other people's anxiety got to you, the same thing happened to me when I was hospitalized and was in a ward with a lot of depressed people with insomnia. And once I was actually kind of sleeping, I was like, I can't be hearing all of these other stories and concerns and people. Like, one woman was going to be discharged the same day as me, and she was just like, what if I can't sleep at home? What if I can't sleep at home? It was like, I can't do this with you.
Right.
And my psychiatrist did not get that at all.
Gosh.
Okay, so did you stick with the outpatient day program, or did you stop doing that?
I did it for 4 days, and then I stopped. But a nurse there kind of gave me a tip, because I at this point I hadn't really talked much about the sexual abuse because I didn't know that it was related. Mm-hmm. So nobody connected that dot, including me. So all I knew is that I just felt like I was horrible mother. I couldn't do anything right. That my son was mad at me all the time, and I couldn't get in on this stupid schedule. So I stopped going there. But then one of the nurses there said, "Hey, if you have trauma in your background, you know, there's this kind of therapy called EMDR, where they kind of go back into your brain. I mean, like, not with a knife or anything, but they get you in this sort of hypnotic state where they go back and reprogram these memories that are causing you to have all of these issues, because you've got that, all those memories are saved in there and you can't access them normally." So I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. Wow, never heard of that. Okay. So I mentioned it to my therapist, and she said, oh, well, I know a lady who does that, so why don't you go see her? So I thought, okay. And so I went to see this woman who told me that in one or two sessions, she could rectify all of the 10 years of abuse I had. And that sounded kind of too good to be true, but I was like, what, you know, okay. I was kind of desperate. And so she, we had our first session at like 2 hours. I don't know if whoever's familiar with EMDR, it was a kind of intense experience. She basically had me think of my worst memory of being molested, and then she kind of tried to reframe that. So my worst memory had to do with my breath and being touched. And in remembering that, in that state of mind, it was not only very traumatic, I threw up in her garbage can, but I also, like, really remembered it in full for the first time in, like, you know, 15 years or something like that. And she, you know, she tries to, afterwards, she gave me some kind of guardian animal that was supposed to carry me away from this bad thing happening. And I understand that that makes sense, and I think it's a good technique, but I think it has to be used things really carefully. Because what happened after that is that every time my son latched on my breast, then I had this flashback of that memory. So then not only was I obsessed with everything about him and worried about it, but I also felt absolutely kind of defiled whenever I would breastfeed. So it was like kind of a nightmare. I would just sweat, and like my vision would kind of go in and out. And then afterward, I was always fine when I was holding him, and I put him down and I'd start sobbing. That went on for quite a while. I tried to speak. That was a hard issue between my husband and I, because I wanted to breastfeed. He wanted me to breastfeed. He was like, this person who did this to you is garbage. We need to show him that, in your mind, show him that he doesn't matter, that we're bigger and stronger than him, and that this little helpless baby deserves, you know, to have this milk. And I understand why he said that. But at the time, it was very difficult to deal with, because I just felt really trapped in the situation. So yeah, that was kind of the next step in getting me towards depression. Any questions about that?
No, I just wish I was in the room with you and can hug you.
Not fake.
I actually had the question when you were talking about the abuse, how you were, if that was coming up through breastfeeding. So,
oh yeah, that's kind of how it works.
Okay.
So
then the depression started.
So I would say this is all like maybe 2 or 3 months after the birth. This is when I would say for me, depression, it didn't ever look like that. Just sort of, if you even have heard of depression, you might think it's somebody who's sad and just kind of down in the dumps, doesn't want to do anything, sleeps a lot, maybe eats a lot. I was barely eating. I think I lost 40 pounds in like a month, and I was just completely always on high alert, always hypervigilant, and had to take 2 Ambien every night. And then I started thinking I could hear people's thoughts in their heads about me. Everybody was thinking about me. I got really claustrophobic. Couldn't really. I had to start going back to work. We had to pick a daycare for our son, and I don't even know how we did that. I couldn't really focus on anything. I couldn't read a sentence in a book. I couldn't watch TV. People kept telling me, like, just watch TV. You're just lonely. You should read a book. And I was just like, are you kidding me? I couldn't remember a single good thing about me. I couldn't do anything but upset. So, then I finally, this is what depression was like for me. And just cry, I did cry, but not like, I'm a little sad. It was more like, I am devastated all the time. And then finally I went to a psychiatrist, and the first psychiatrist was really scary and old and gross. I waited another few weeks, and then I found someone better, and I decided to try medication. Oh yeah, this is a really quick tangent. That was also an extremely difficult decision to make. I had never heard of anybody I knew going on medication except my mom, who that's a whole nother can of worms we won't open today, but not a person I wanted to be like in that way. And he basically seemed to take it as like, just take a pill and it's going to be fine. I've always been like a really focused and determined person, kind of like the whole natural birth thing. I'm going to just take this on and study it and conquer it. That's what I was trying to do. Yeah. So I was like, medication, what? I don't know. But eventually I just thought I was going to keep functioning at all until I tried that. The next question was my husband being very against it. And then the whole breastfeeding question. So with breastfeeding being as difficult as it was at that point anyway, when we finally faced the fact that I probably was going to try meds, we had to figure out, do we want to try to do something that's supposedly safe during breastfeeding or not? I know you understand how this is. Making a decision about something like that in this state of being was so, it was one of the hardest things I've ever done. It just felt like it was impossible to decide. But finally, I was like, okay, no, we're gonna do this. We're gonna wean the baby, and he was great with the bottle and the formula and everything. And it was one of the biggest reliefs, and at the same time, the biggest heartbreaks I've ever had in my life to stop breastfeeding. Unfortunately, nobody told me to do it slowly, so I did it within a week. And that was, not easy on the hormones either, but it took me, and my anxiety got better right away. I was extremely fortunate in that way. I was able to stop. Oh, I also had just my back hurt all the time. There's like spasms in my back and these tingly feelings in my arms and legs a lot. That stopped, but I didn't feel, my mood swings didn't go away for 2 months. So I still, you know, I'd feel like everything was all right. 1 minute, the next minute I'd be crying, and that took a long time. But that's kind of in a nutshell. I eventually found a therapist who I cool. I like tech a lot, but I wanted to find somebody who'd been through PPD because I felt like I needed that.
Mm-hmm.
That was really important.
What happened with the? So you had back spasms and tingling?
Yeah, that was some of my anxiety symptoms were I just had this tension in the middle of my back. It was just like feel like I don't know, like my muscle, like something was pulling my muscles into the center. Like It's hard to explain. It's just like if you go running and you kind of are out of breath and you can't really breathe. It was kind of like that, but just randomly. And then I had tingling in my arms and legs. Off and on all the time. It's really uncomfortable. I couldn't like cuddle with my husband or relax because my body was just
so tense.
Yeah, kind of bad. But yeah, luckily the medicine helped with that too. And
so how do you feel today? How old is your son?
He's 2.5 now.
And how do you feel like you're doing?
Well, you know, I really feel like I've changed in the many, many ways for the better because of this experience, because I had to face a lot of demons from my past. I had to put myself first for the first time in my life. I mean, in many ways. I had to realize that nobody else is really going to take care of you except yourself. And I had to, stop. I had to stop being mean to myself. I didn't realize before how negative I was, how I talked down to myself all the time in my head. But if I had continued to do that the way I had been my whole life my adult life, that combined with the way my body and the chemistry of my brain, if I had given in to that negativity, I'm sure that I would not be here anymore because there's just no way. So that combination would not have worked. So even when I couldn't think anymore, I saw words like love or forgiveness. Forgiveness was the first one I said actually. I couldn't focus on exactly what I was doing, but I would just say F, O, R, with each breath, things like that. Like those techniques help me with any stress I have now. I just kind of had to change my whole consciousness, how I see the world, how I look out through my eyes and experience things, and with a lot of love and forgiveness and faith and hope and all those things that I used to repeat. So I was on meds for a year, and then I weaned off because I felt like I was okay, and I had done a lot of, it really helped to get to know other moms who've been through this. I've read every book I could find, read lots of blogs, things like that, and I really want to make a difference for other people who don't know what's going on with them, like, and just help people. That is also a part of my life I never had before. I was pretty shy and reserved. Now I'm like, okay, I got a mental illness, so there we go. What else? It was really important to me to get off the meds. I don't know that that's necessarily a good thing or not. It just was what it was. Mm-hmm. And then over time, like the next year, I think I slid back into depression, but it kind of disguised itself from me a bit because it was kind of cyclical. I think I had like a PMDD, which is premenstrual dysphoric disorder. It's kind of like a mini depression before your cycle. But it's weird. You spend all this time reading all these things about other people and other people's stories. You don't see it in yourself, which is kind of crazy. But eventually I figured it out about right around when the election happened. I did not do well at all. So I just kind of had to face the fact that I needed to get more help again. And I did. So I'm really grateful for that. So that's kind of how I'm doing in a nutshell. Oh, yeah, I've worked through a lot of the sexual abuse issues, and yeah, that's doing a lot better now. I haven't finished working on the case against my stepdad because every time I try, I stop sleeping and I get kind of freaked out, but I'm working on it, baby stuff. So
my therapist, it says that the healing doesn't happen in the courtroom. It happens, you know, in therapy with the work you do of yourself.
That is so true, I think. I feel that the only reason I would want to do this is just to protect other people from him because I know that he's worked with other families since me, you know, and my biggest fear is that he's hurt other women, mm-hmm. or children, and nobody knows. Nobody is talking about it because they're afraid, you know, and or that he's doing it now. I don't think he is. He's very old now. But yeah, it's all true about healing. I agree with you. Absolutely. It's become a question now of, like, if I go through with this, I put myself through this ordeal, I'm going to hurt myself. I feel like I'm going to hurt my family, too, because I'm going to be upset. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to deal with me. And that's a consequence. But comparing that with the potential consequences for other people if I don't do anything, it's just kind of tricky.
Yeah.
But something I'll be wrestling with for a while, but yeah.
So, and you mentioned at the beginning that you had PTSD from the birth.
Yes, I believe so. I just a flashback from it, and then the PTSD I mentioned also I think is from being abused, and the flashbacks I have from the contact with my breasts and other incidents that happened. Yeah. So.
Thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your story.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I hope somebody can relate and that someone can learn and it helps me to talk about it and share. So I thank you for making this happen. We're both very busy moms, so I know how hard it is to find time. Thank you.
Yeah, I love, you know, before you go, so you said you read books. Which, can you recommend any for our listeners?
Can I recommend any for people to read?
Yeah. Like, was there, like, one or two that you particularly stood out as, like, as being helpful?
Yes. There's one called The Mother to Mother PPD Support Book, and that's, like, a bunch of short stories
mm-hmm.
that moms wrote about their experiences. That was really helpful. And then I also read one called Hormones, the Brain, the Body, or something like that, what every woman should know about their hormones. And that is fascinating, like, super helpful. That covers, like, OCD, bipolar, I think psychosis, PPMD, PMS, all of the, everything in between. And it really, like, yeah, it has stories as well. I love that one. I also, something I've been working on lately is acupressure. So I do acupressure on myself. There's a book called Emotional Healing Through Acupressure, I believe. Or Acupressure for Emotional Healing, that's right. And it has places you can touch, you know, points you can touch for depression, anxiety, trauma, PTSD, all sorts of different things. Sometimes I'm like, what, which one? guilt is in there too, grief. Yeah, I really feel like that helps. And there are also mantras in there, and like, it's amazing to kind of work through. I feel like, yeah, there's a lot to still recover from in terms of the PPD experience also. What other books? Those are my top three, I would say.
I will read them all.
Okay.
I love reading. You know, it's taken me a while, though, because Pip is older than your son, but I'm still, I feel like I'm just getting into the place where I can read these books and not, and I feel a lot of emotions, but I'm, like, able to feel them and work through them, as opposed to before it was, like, I was too raw and tender, and I'd read the books, and I'd be, like, totally overwhelmed, and I'd have to stop reading.
Yeah, I understand. I'm glad you listened to yourself about that. That's so important. I feel like I went a little overboard sometimes. I should have been more careful. But it sounds like you're being careful. The one with the stone on the front, that I think through postpartum progress, like, there was a contest. Did you see that a couple of years ago?
No, I missed that.
I can't remember. I believe it's in the book club.
Okay.
That we're in. But it's, I think it's something with darkness. Anyway, that one I still can't read because it's too raw for me for some reason. But yeah, there are lots of good resources out there.
All right. Well, I will let you get back to your momming today.
Okay. You too.
Thanks for coming on. So that's it for this week. Thank you, Lindsay, so much for sharing your story. Show notes will be available at ppdadventures.com. If you'd like to sign up for the email list, just head over to ppdadventures.com, and right there on the homepage, there's a little form to fill out, and I promise I will not fill your inbox with a bunch of spam. Postpartum depression is a very lonely and isolating illness, but you are not alone. Thousands and thousands of women have suffered from this illness, and thousands are suffering from it right now, probably hundreds of thousands. I'm not a numbers person. A lot. You're not alone. You're not to blame for having an illness like this. Nothing you did caused this. And with proper help, you will make a full recovery. I love you all, and I hope you have a great week.